Blog Talk Radio.
Initiation is when, you know, a person, when they, when
when they go through the initiation process, they shave the head off, they shave all the hair off their head, and the purpose of doing that, because they have to get to the crown of the individual head, because they put the secret of the Risha into the crown of the individual head. You know what I'm saying? And that's what makes that individual a priest or a priestess of that Orisha.
Okay.
That's just dealing with leukemia, you know. From the Nigerian perspective, you can have more than one crown into your head, you know. So you have about 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 Orishas, you'd be priest of those different Orishas. That's from the Nigerian perspective. So more than likely, I pretty much claim the Nigerian perspective, and I also work hard as possible to work, like work and pray and practice the Nigerian perspective, because that is the root of it. You know what I'm saying? The Santeria, the Leukemia, the Condomly and stuff like that, those just off branches, you know. But I choose to go, you know, to the tradition, to the root of it, and practice from the very beginning. So in Yoruba, I'm just a practitioner in Yoruba. I can't do any type of work like that for people, anything like that, because I'm just a practitioner, which means that I am no Babalorisha, I am no Babalao. I'm just a practitioner. I'm just one who has the Rishas, who able to practice, you know what I'm saying, with a Risha. And long before I received my warriors, I have purchased this book on how to read tarot cards. And the book teaches you how to read tarot cards and a regular deck of cards. And I have learned it and studied it and practiced it for like many years, you know. And I used to pretty much keep it to myself and, you know, family and friends, if they want to know something, find out something. And I used to pretty much do that with no problem. But just so recently, I think maybe like in the last almost 2 years, I kind of like went public with tarot readings. You know what I'm saying? I'm pretty much on Facebook doing tarot readings. And I do a lot of tarot readings. And sometimes people, they don't ask me directly. They just make indirect statements on Facebook as in, oh, well, if you're a priest, then why are you reading tarot cards and so on and so forth? You know what I'm saying? And they don't actually direct it to me or just ask me a question. If they'll ask me a question, I'll have no problem of, you know, answering a question. It depends on what mood I'm in, because sometimes I don't like to be questioned because then I'm an adult. But, you know, most of the time I pretty much get into it, so therefore people won't be misconstrued. The reason why I still continue to read tarot cards is because, first, I haven't read tarot cards about 10 years. I enjoy it, and I know how to do it very well, and I go into the essence of it. When it comes to carry shells, coconuts, and stuff like that, I know the Majuba. I do the Majuba. The Majuba is a prayer. You pay homage to the Risha or the Egus that you're calling down to ask a specific question, which is yes or no. That's the readings that I do with just Yoruba, you know what I'm saying, just for myself, for no one else. When it comes to like the actual tarot cards, I'm able to go into more details and get into more of the aspect of what's going on with the person and, you know, what they're trying to do and what's going on with them. And just like whatever the problem is, I can pretty much get into detail with it. Myself, I had a lot of readings done in the past, and I had a lot of Ebos, and a lot of Ebos I remembered, you know, when I did my my readings and whatnot. And usually dealing with Orisha or any like real African system, when you get a reading done, there is always a ceremony to do after the reading. If the reading come out Ide, you still have to do an Ebo to turn, you know, saying to keep the Ide. Ide means good. The Ebo is a sacrifice, you know, that is done for the person to keep things good in their life. If a person get a reading and it come out as a Sobo, that means the reading came out bad. They would definitely have to have a ritual done, you know, by the priest who actually did the reading, you know what I'm saying, to turn that Osobo into Ide, which means they're going to turn the bad into good. You know what I'm saying? So no matter what, when you get a reading, you always have to do, there's always a ceremony and a sacrifice to do behind that. And if not, then, you know, you don't want to open up an Odu and don't want to do the ceremony, because now that causes, like, another problem for the client, you know. Reading tarot. Huh?
No, I was just saying, okay.
Okay. Now, reading tarot cards is not opening an Odu. You know what I'm saying? Reading tarot cards, the way I do it, I'm working with my ancestors. I'm working with my Egos. You know, Egos mean ancestors. And, yeah. And what I'm doing is I use the tarot card as a tool, as a divination tool to communicate with me to, you know, what my ancestors are actually telling me. You know, it's the same thing as a babalawo. A babalawo divination tool is an opele. That's the chain. You know, the divination tool for a babalawo orisha, his tool is the 16 carry shells. That's a traditional way. Or sometimes if they lukimi or santeria, they probably use like 8 carry shells. You know, and they drop the shells. You know what I'm saying? If 6 is up and the rest is down, you know, that's right down to 6. Then they drop the shells again. You know what I'm saying? 5 up, then they write down to 5. And then they continue the process to pull the Odu and read the Odu and tell the client everything, what is going on with them and why it's going on. And with that Odu comes the Ebo with that Odu. Because after you open that Odu, you have to close Odu by doing the Ebo. I don't do that with tarot cards. I actually tell a person what's going on and what the problem is. Is if a female call me, she want to know if her husband is cheating on her or what the case may be. You know what I'm saying? And then I'll pull a card and whatnot. You know, the lover card might come up. And then after the lover card come up, then a woman card come up. You know what I'm saying? Then, you know, that's self-explanatory. Okay, he got a lover on the side. You know what I'm saying? Now, right. To do an Ebo for that is like he doing that on his own free will. I mean, he's seen another woman, so what Ebo you do? You do an Ebo to stop him from seeing another woman on his side? I mean, if he's seeing another woman's side, that means his wife is not doing something right at home. You know what I'm saying? So, you know,
when there's things he needs to work out that you can't really approach in the ceremony, that's something that they need to communicate with on a human level.
Yes, exactly. You know what I'm saying? But you know, some priests, you know, they look at it like, well, if you do readings and then you gotta do Ebo. But sometimes, you know, people, you know, even though they don't want to do the Ebo, they just want confirmation. And when they call for a reading, they kind of like knew or they had a good idea, but they just want to hear from someone else. Because if you're able to details about what they're going through and they don't even know you, then that means you know what you're talking about. So the Ebo in that situation would be the good advice to the person.
Right.
If a man is cheating on a woman, like, you know, that scenario, you know, don't approach him in with anger and rage and you want to do something. You know what I'm saying? That's not going to solve the problem. You know what I'm saying? So if he's going to see another woman, then that means there's something right. There's something that's not right at home. He's not getting at home, or he think he can't get at home, or he feel he can't get at home. So now what she should do is try to consult with him, you know what I'm saying, to try to find out what the problem is, what is she doing, what is she not doing, doing a little too much or not doing it at all, that how can she step her status up to, so therefore he don't have to go outside of home to do what it is that he feel he needs to do. You see what I'm saying? That would pretty much be a bow. A sacrifice. Just something that's done to try to solve the problem.
Brother, let's take a step back. We mentioned earlier in the call the Yoruba tradition, which is the root. We also mentioned Lokomi and a little bit of Santeria. Can you give us some history? I know a lot of people already know the history of how things came from Africa, spread through the Caribbean, and then, of course, into the Americas. Can you give us the history real brief for anybody who might not know, and what the difference of these traditions are and how they came from the root in Africa?
Okay. About 5,000 years ago, you have a great ancestor by the name of King Oduduwa who came to Ele Ife, which is Nigeria, and he established, you know, the Ifa Foundation right there. And he started teaching about Ifa and started spreading Ifa right there. From there, Ifa, you know, got very strong there and very dominant there, and it just kept going and kept spreading. When the slave trade took place, around about like the 1500s, you know, the African people was like two different tribes. When one tribe went to war with another tribe, and what was left of that tribe, they became servants of that tribe. You know, and from there, when the Europeans was over here, a lot of Europeans came from Europe, and they couldn't live the lifestyle that they want to live in Europe. So they heard about the so-called New World, which is America, and they came over here, and we know the Christopher Columbus came over. They always thought the world was flat, but
right.
They didn't have no idea it was round. They discovered it was round. They sailed. They came over here. They found the people here that they call the Indians. They tried to enslave the Indians to do the labor work in this country and everything. Indians started dying off and all type of diseases and everything that was distributing to the pilgrims and whatnot. The Europeans needed more people to do the labor work and whatnot. They heard about Africa. They went to Africa, and they wanted to do tradings, you know what I'm saying, with some of the cheese and stuff there in Africa. You know, they had liquor. They had guns. They had, you know, things that the Africans, the chiefs, had never heard, never seen before. So they needed some people, you know what I'm saying, to come to bring back to the Americas to help build and make it what it is to this day. So the chief, you know what I'm saying, took upon himself, like the Africans that was captured, that was considered their service, those are the ones that they sold through the slave trade, and they brought them back over here. You know, and that's, you know, the Atlantic slave trade, and pretty much how the African people came over here, you know. And when the people came over here, you know, before they came to America, they stopped at the Caribbean, you know, Jamaica, Cuba, South America. And when they stopped at Cuba, you know, they dropped some African people off there. And from there, they couldn't practice the way they was practiced back in Nigeria because the slave master, you know, religion at that time was Catholicism, which was the pretty much the French and the Portuguese, you know, and the Spanish, especially the Spaniards. Their religion was Catholicism. So what they did was they stripped the Africans of their African names, their language, and their tradition. And they was told that what they practiced in Africa was ungodly, it was devil worshiping, and so on and so forth. So they imposed Catholicism on the Africans, that they had to practice that or else or they would die. So what the African people did, they camouflaged their orishas with the European Catholic saints. You know what I'm saying? They camouflaged it. So therefore, when the slave master went into the headquarters where the Africans was at, you know what I'm saying, the Africans looked like they was practicing Catholicism. Well, in reality, they was practicing their own African tradition in secrecy behind the Catholicism. You know, and when they did it in Cuba, it became known as leukemia. The word leukemia means friend. And when they did it in Puerto Rico, it became known as Santeria. The word Santeria means worship of saints. And when they did it in South America, it became known as Candomblé. And, you know, those are different branches of Yoruba, you know. And when I, you know, received my worries and everything, I know it wasn't from the tradition from Africa. But I still did anyway because at that particular time, that was all that was available to me that I could get my hands on. Now I'm in direct contact with a chief of Babalawo in Nigeria that I've been working with for like 3 years and whatnot. And, you know, I'll be receiving Ifa soon and receiving a lot of different things in Nigeria the traditional way. I choose to receive and practice the traditional way because that is the original way. And, you know, I want to practice, you know, from the root. And that's pretty much how, you know, the different branches of Yoruba came about, and that's how it pretty much came to the Americas.
Okay. Now, I've heard, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I have very little contact. I've had very little contact with people in African traditional religion over the years. I've done my own reading over the past 20 years, but, you know, it's not the same thing as being hands-on. So since you're more hands-on, what do you see as some of the issues going on in the tradition, either the direct tradition from directly from Africa and in some of the other traditions in the Caribbean and whatnot?
Well, in the Caribbean, especially in Cuba, you know, you have a lot of the people there, they have this assumption that all the secrets from Africa are buried and hidden in Cuba, and they know the real way, the only way, and etc. And, you know, the Cubans, they don't try to acknowledge the Nigerians or credit them. You know, some do and some don't. Nowadays, you have a lot of, you know, Cubans and Spanish people going to Nigeria because they recognize the fact that that is the root and that's where it came from. And if you want to catch about the root, if you really want to practice Ifa, you have to go where Ifa was established at, you know. We have some who feel like, you know, what they content with what they already have, and they're going to continue to work with that, you know. During the slave trade, in the Caribbean, they didn't have what they call obi. They only had access to coconuts. And they would, you know, break open the coconut and use the coconut for divination, you know, to find out things, yes and no, and how to, you know, feed their reaches and how to communicate with their reaches and what they want to eat or the case may be, you know. Now, the traditional way, they have what they call obi. Those are coconuts. And when they come all four, they'd be combined together. And you would use your thumbs and your nails and your thumbs to separate them. And when you separate them, you're going to automatically have two males and two females inside the coconut. And you have to, you know, remove the eyes from the coconut and whatnot. And you have to decipher, you know, the male coconuts from the female coconuts. And when you drop the coconuts, you know, when you drop them, you know, you might have a male, you have a female. You have to be able to decipher that and what that means and what is, how to interpret it. You might drop a colon, you might have two females. So what do that mean? You have to decipher it, you know. You might drop the colon and you have two males. You have to decipher it and what that means. That's the process that I'm studying right now. Now, in the Caribbeans, they don't know about that. They don't practice that. You know, and a lot of times they have coconuts and they use coconut as obi to find out yes or no. But the coconuts doesn't have male or female, so you can really divine and get into the essence of what is being said. It's just yes or no, and that's it. And then some people refer to the coconuts as obi. No, coconuts are coconuts, and obi is colonuts. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
And, yeah, and, you know, and a lot of, and another thing, like I already mentioned, that in Nigeria, you can have about 10 crowns, Chango crown, Ogun crown, or Chosi crown, you know, the secrets into your head. You know what I'm saying? But dealing with Santeria and Lukimi, they say you only get Ocho one time, and you get that crown of that Orisha, and then that's it. You can find to that Orisha for the rest of your days, and that's it. That's not accurate. You know what I'm saying? According to the traditional, that's not accurate. But, you
why
know,
you think
this,
why do you think this different? Why do you think that difference evolved? Why do you think that came along in the development of the traditions as they come from the Caribbean as opposed to what it was originally in Africa? Why do you think it evolved from being able to be crowned with several different Orishas to just one?
It's a power struggle. You know what I'm saying? Because, yeah, it's a power struggle because if I'm crowned in Lukimi, right, and I have that Ashe from that Orisha, you know what I'm saying? And everybody has just that Ashe from that particular Orisha they crowned from, we're pretty much on a pretty much equal level. But then again, I go over the head and go back to Nigeria and traditional, and I receive this crown or that crown from the Orishas and whatnot. You know what I'm saying? When I come back, I would have more Ashe, more power, because when I work with Chango or Ogun or Kizubi, I have more authority because I'll be a Baba Larisha of those particular Orishas. So, you know, you got an individual who has like about, let's just say, six crowns of different Orishas, right? And the people around him don't have that, then he'd be more in authority.
Okay.
So to maintain control, you can't have those Orishas. You can only have just one Orisha, and then the rest of Orishas, you could receive them, but you can't be crowned with them.
Okay.
But when you go to Nigeria, and the Bible, I'll do the reading with the Opele right there, and you could be crowned this Orisha, that Orisha, and go through the ceremony. And when you go to Nigeria and receive, you know, say, initiation to that Orisha, it's a lot more cheaper than it is in Americas. Because in America, you know, they try to charge you $8,000, $9,000 to be crowned a particular Orisha. You go to Nigeria, you can go to Nigeria, you know, and, you know, the plane ride is less than $1,000. Round trip is less than $1,000. You know, 9 times 10, you're going to stay with the chief, so you don't have to pay for the hotel. You know what I'm saying? You're going to be there at least about 2 weeks, you know, for, you know, go through the whole process of crowning. a priest of that Orisha. Be a priest of that priestess of that Orisha. Now, some Nigerians, they may charge you $1,200 or they may charge you $1,500. They know what they're charging in Americas. So they're not going to charge you what they charge in Americas because they want to continue business for themselves as well. So they're gonna charge you, you know what I'm saying, way less cheaper. And if you got any sense, you're going to be like, well, I get it in Nigeria for cheaper, and it's traditional. So if it's traditional, it has more power, holds more merit and more weight. But the Santamir and Luki Me, they try to shoot you down as in, well, you over there receiving that. Who's seeing this ceremony? Who's witnessing the ceremony? So when you get back over here, it's like, well, there's no witnesses that you received that, so we don't know. And it becomes a whole nother, you know, discussion of debate. You know what I'm saying? But mind you, that, you know, some of the people who's crowned in Luki Me, where the case may be, when you meet them for the first time, or you meet them, whatever the case may be, I may be crowned, you may be crowned, but guess what? When they was crowned, we wasn't there when they was crowned. So we can, you know, use the same strategy. Well, how do we know that you was crowned? We wasn't present. You see what I'm saying? And all the people who was present may be elders, and they probably transcend already. So now who's your witness? You know what I'm saying? So it's a game. It's really a game. You know what I'm saying? It's a game that could be solved. Because when a Babala use Opele, and they see what they can see everything what you have, and the same thing with any Babala Risha of Luki Mi, what the case may be, when they use them 16 carry shells right there, working with Obatala, working whatever Risha they have, they see Obatala or whatever Risha they're working with would tell them who you are and what you have and what you don't have. So whether you had a physical witness there or not, Obatala is not going to lie for anyone. No Orisha is going to lie for anyone. Egun's not going to lie for no one. Ifa is not going to lie for no one. If you have it, you have it. If you don't, you don't. This is why I get on the radio and let it be known that I do not have a crown dealing with Yoruba.
I can
understand. I have no crown.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Let's be honest anyway. From the beginning of my shows, I've told everybody I'm not initiated in anything. I do my own thing. But yeah, it's best to be honest. You said that there could be some solution to this, and I made me think of another question real quick. I hear again. Let me know if you don't want to touch on this. You just let me know, and I can go to something else. But I've heard that there's a lot of discord between the different houses in the traditions. How can we come to it? How do you see, in your opinion, how could there be a solution to some of these issues, power struggles and whatnot?
Well, honestly, I don't think it can ever be a solution because people always going to have their opinions, their ideologies, and they're going to do what they was taught, what was right or wrong. You know what I'm saying? They're going to still continue their way that they feel comfortable. You see what I'm saying? So it's going to always be a discretion. To solve it, it's like, okay, let's agree that this is all wrong and this is all right, and let's do what's right. I can't never see that happening because people, you know, when people was born and raised a certain particular way, you know what I'm saying, they've been indoctrinated because they've been raised that way. So here you come 20 years later, 30 years later, and you're saying, okay, all that what you're doing is okay, but this is better. This is the real deal. This is tradition. This is what they're not going to accept that because they're going to say, well, I was raised or I was taught. Okay, I understand that. But just because you was raised, you was taught, doesn't make it actual fact. You see what I'm saying? Like me, I was, you know, my grandma was trying to raise me to be Christian. You know what I'm saying? I had to go to church. I had to go to Sunday school. I had to do this. I had to do that. But I didn't choose that. She chose that for me. That's what she wanted for me. But that's not what I wanted for myself. That's why it was always a problem. Because I never wanted to go to church. I never wanted to do this. Never wanted to do that. I just wanted to be a kid and go play and just do what kids do. But I had to go to church and I had to go to Bible study. And I had to do this. So when I got old enough to break away from it, I broke away from it. You know what I'm saying? And
right.
that's like someone saying to me, well, how can we get you back to the church? How can you can't? Because that's not for me. I'm not interested in that. That has nothing to do with my origin. It has nothing to do with my tradition. I'm not learning anything from there. I'm not gaining anything from there. So why should I go back to the church? As far as I'm concerned, I was never in the church because I never embraced, I never accepted, I never acknowledged it. I never, you know what I'm saying? I just had to do it because I was living with my grandmother, and that was just the end of that as a kid.
So how did you, what was the turning point for you? What introduced you? I know you said it was about 2005 when you got your Warriors. What introduced you and got you ready for that day when you got your Warriors? What? How did you first hear about the Orishas? What was your introduction?
Well, it's pretty much a long story. Unfortunately, I was incarcerated by the time I was 17, you know, and I did like 13 years, you know, and that period of incarceration, when I went to jail at 17, I was illiterate. And as I was being illiterate, you know, I wanted to learn how to read, and I started stages of beginning to learn how to read. And when I learned how to read, I started learning about, you know, Black history. And when I got into Black history, I enjoyed it. It was just something that I just never knew. And the more I read, the more I studied, the more I learned, and the more I got involved, you know. And I just kept reading and studying because the more I learned, it was like, are you serious? Like, it's like a lot of the stuff I just didn't know. And I would ask people about it, and I would bring it up to them, and they wouldn't know. They'd be adults, and they didn't know. So it's like I'm on to something that they don't know. And I felt smart. I felt good. And I just continued to learn and study and learn and study and learn and study and learn and study. So then I started getting into the process as in, you know, okay, I learned about, you know, Christianity and Islam and Judaism and whatnot. And I learned that those religions came about in the AD era. All those came about in the AD era, which means those are newly religious. So now I begin to start to question things like, okay, those are newly religions came out in the AD era. But what was our people practicing in the BC era? The BC is before Christ. What was their religion? What was their tradition? What was they doing? There was no Islam in the BC era. There was no Christianity in the BC era. It was none in the BC era. So what were they doing? That was because of the question. So now I wanted to research that, and I came across, you know, Egyptology, and it was, you know, speaking about the different gods and the goddesses in Egyptology. And it became like a lot of debate, you know, bickering back and forth, so much arguments about that, about Egyptology, that I just lost interest in Egyptology because there's just too much, you know, animosity, too much arguing, bickering, back and forth. So then, you know, I came across Santeria in jail. And someone, you know, gave me a book on Santeria, and I started reading it. And when I started reading it, it would speak about the Orisha. It had the word Orisha, and then it had a slash that said saint. And it always say Orisha/saint. Now I'm trying to figure out, okay, I know what a saint's supposed to be, but what is Orisha? And then as you go into reading the books, you know, you see that, you know, that, you know, the Orishas is from Nigeria. This is an African-based tradition. And, you know, it's mixed with Catholicism due to the fact that slavery took place and the African people. So I'm not one of those people who say the slaves. No, they were people before they was even called slave. So the African people was enslaved by the Spaniards, the Portuguese, and et cetera, and their religion was, you know, Catholicism. And I also learned in the BC era that in the BC era, there was no religion at all. People was just spiritual. They was paying homage to their ancestors, their great-great-great-grandmother, and their great-great-great-grandfather. And they lit candles, and they made offerings, and made fruits. And I learned that, you know, that when our people transcend, they're not dead. There's no such thing as dead. You know what I'm saying? Dead means non-existence. When our people transcend, they're no longer in the physical form, but now they're in the spiritual form. You know? They can't do what they used to do because they don't have the physical body. They can't go to the store and order things and bring the packages home and cook and do things. They can't do that no more because then they're no longer in the physical aspect, but we are in the physical aspect. But now they're able to do things that we can't do. They're able to see the future. They know what's going to happen before it happened, and they can alert us. They can tell us. So what we do is it's a networking thing. We would set out food for the ancestors, you know, the water, the rum, the cigar, and things like that for the ancestors, because they don't have the physical composition to do that no more. But they have the power of insight. They have the power to bless you. They have the power to open doors. They have a lot of different power that they can do for you that we can't do for ourselves. So what we do for exchange, you know, we take care of our ancestors, and our ancestors take care of us. That was going on in the BC era. And I found that out. I said, okay, now we on to something, you know. And, you know, in the AD era, that's when, you know, the English language came about. That's when religion came about. And you know, some people say that there's no difference between religion and spirituality. It's one and the same, and it's this. I beg the difference, you know. Spirituality is spirit. You know, man and woman was born with spirit. You know, you was born with your guardian Risha. You was born with your egg wounds. You are your egg wounds coming back to the earth, reincarnation and whatnot. That's what makes you spiritual, you know. Religion is man-made. Religion is control of the mass of the people, control of minds, manipulation, you know what I'm saying, you know, scaring the people. Well, if you don't do this, if you don't do that, then you're going to go to hell. And if you do what you're supposed to, then you'll go to heaven. See, that's control. That's religion.
Right, right.
You know, and people say that, you know, Yoruba is a religion now and whatnot. Well, the reason why some people say Yoruba is a religion, because under the First Amendment, you know, it falls under the First Amendment, you know, freedom of religion. So therefore, we can practice in our homes, we can practice in public, we can practice just about anywhere, you know what I'm saying? We can pray or, you know, like, do little certain things. We don't get too graphic in public, but, you know, we do little certain things. So with that said, you know, people who really don't know no better, they refer to Yoruba as a religion, you know what I'm saying? But technically, you know, it's a tradition, and that's what it was called in ancient times in Africa. It was a tradition, because before religion came into existence, it was tradition. But when you go to court and try to argue about your spirituality, you can't go in and argue with tradition. You have to fall under the category of religion. So that's how Yoruba and Santeria and Lukumi became a religion, because it's protected by the First Amendment.
Oh,
you know?
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You're saying the practitioners don't actually classify it or consider it a religion, but that helps it be protected under the Constitution, is kind of what I'm getting from that.
Well, you know, a lot of people, you know, the practitioners, even the priests, you know what I'm saying, all call it a religion, you know what I'm saying, because people are stuck on religion. And technically nowadays, it is a religion, because the same thing the Christians do and the Muslims do, they do as well too. You know, you can't feed this. You can't do this without the permission of the priest, or you can't do this like this. So you're still being dictated to on what you can do, what you can't do. You're still being controlled. So technically, it is a religion now in the so-called New World. You see what I'm saying?
Okay.
Yeah, because they quick to tell you, oh, women, you know, especially in leukemia and Santeria, a woman can't see or do, a woman can't do this, and a woman can't this, and a woman this. I mean, you know, they got so much stipulations about a woman, man. Like, it's like male chauvinist. Like, it's crazy. And if it wasn't for the woman giving birth to the babies, then there wouldn't be no man. You know what I'm saying? But a woman can't do this, a woman can't, you know, I don't follow that. That's a communist point of view from the Caribbeans, you know? That's where that comes from. That's where that ideology comes from, you know? They want to maintain some type of control and power over people, especially women. So, you know, that's the communism that's up in that. So a lot of people don't really see that, but if you know communism, then you see how they emerge, you know what I'm saying, the tradition with communism, and that's how it became a religion.
Do you not see some of that? I'm asking, so I don't know. Do you not see some of that in Africa? Because I've heard that the Babalawos in Africa, the women only do certain things, and the Babalawos can do certain things that women can't do, or something along those lines. Correct me if I'm wrong.
From what I study in the Babalawos that I deal with, I know a lot of people are not going to agree with this. You know what I'm saying? But you have women over there who receive Ifa, and they have a name for them. They don't call them Babalawos. I can't recall the name at the moment. But it's like the name that they have is like a woman Babalawo, like a female Babalawo.
Oh, wow.
And that's what they do in Nigeria. Now, a lot of Caribbean people, they freaks out. They don't want to hear that. That's not correct. Da 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 da. But the reality of it came from Nigeria. You know what I'm saying? If it wasn't for, you know, King Oduduwa to settle and Ele Ife, you know, the Caribbeans wouldn't have those little off branches. So how can you
right.
try to dictate to Nigeria what is right and what is wrong, or what the case may be? So, I mean, what, you know, from what I studied and the chiefs that I deal with over there, you have women over there as chief. You have a woman by the name of Chief Farmer from Nigeria who writes books that I study from, that I learn from. And she's on a cover of her book, Chief Farmer. Black woman.
Wow.
Nigerian. Dark skin. And she's reading Ifa and pulling old dudes and doing that. You know what I'm saying? And she's on a cover of her book. And all the Babalawos and everybody in Nigeria know a Chief Farmer. And you could purchase the books right over here from Amazon.com, Chief Farmer. And you would look right at her. She's a woman, Chief Farmer. Yeah, a woman. So as far as Nigerians say, oh, a woman can't do this, a woman can't do that, there was never no communists in Nigeria.
Right, right.
So they don't have a communist mentality or a communist concept. They have a more of a traditional mentality and traditional concept. And if it wasn't for the women, the tradition wouldn't survive. Because in order to brainwash a generation, you brainwash a woman. In order to educate a generation or save a generation, you educate the woman.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Because through the woman comes the whole nation.
Let me ask you this real quick, bro. What Orishas do you feel closest to, or what connections do you feel strongest among the Orishas?
Eshu.
Eshu. And I assume Eshu and Shango.
Well, on my behalf, right, you know, according to the leukemia theory, right, when I received my worries, you know, originally, Shango was my father. But as I was told, Eshu liked me and tricked Shango of my head, and Eshu became my father. You know, but Shango is still considered like my stepfather.
Okay.
So when I first set up my Facebook page, you know, I put Eshu first because he had the keys to open all the doors. He's the only one to take the Ebo to heaven, you know. But at the same time, I can't forget about Chango because Chango is thunder, lightning, fire. He's a warrior. And
right.
I also have that in me as well. So when I set up my Facebook page, I put Eshu Sango. When I first put it up, I put, you know, I spelled it the leukemia way, Eshu, then Chango. But then when I, you know, continue my studies and practice about, you know, Orisha, and from the Nigerian perspective, I changed the spelling, you know what I'm saying, and I spelled the Nigerian way, and I pretty much, you know, follow up from the Nigerian perspective because that is a tradition, and that's a tradition I choose to follow. That's a tradition I'm strong with. But, yeah, Eshu, he had the keys to open all doors and close all doors. So he's the only Orisha that could take the Ebo to Olodumare and to fix the, you know, to solve the problem here on Earth. Eshu. So I really, you know, love Eshu. He's done a lot of marvelous things for me, you know, in the past. So I have everything good to say about Eshu, you know. Some people, when they speak on Eshu, the first thing they say, oh, he's a trickster. See, that's like, how can I put it? That's like lack of understanding of Eshu. You know what I'm saying? You don't really know Eshu. Yes, he's a trickster, but if your hand calls for it, you know, you try to trick him, you try to crap him around, oh, he's going to trick you because he's a master of tricks. You know, I had a woman approach me one time, and, you know, she had a little smirk on her face because she was trying to be kind of slick. She was like, oh, Eshu Sango, I knew a brother named by the name Eshu, and he was a trickster, and he did this and he did that. So I have nothing to do with that individual. I'm my own individual. That's number one. And I said, Eshu has the keys to open all doors for you. Eshu is the one to take the elbow to heaven. Eshu opened doors for people. Oh, I didn't mean to offend you. I'm not offended, but I'm just enlightening you on who Eshu was. because you only stuck on, you know, the aspect of him being a trickster. Let's be stuck on the real aspect of him having the keys to open all doors for people. Let's be stuck on the aspect as he is the only Orisha to have the Ashe to take the Ebo to heaven, to Olodumare. Just him. No one else. No other Orisha. Just him.
Now,
so let's be stuck
on
that.
I've done some reading, like I said, just reading and discussion with some people who are initiated, but explain the relationship between Eshu and Olodumare so that people kind of understand what that means in the tradition.
Okay, Olodumare is the supreme god, the high power, the most high. You know what I'm saying? The ones who created Ifa, the ones who created the galaxy above, and, you know, the most high god. And Eshu is, I guess you would say, like a servant to Olodumare, the supreme god. You know what I'm saying? And that's why, and Olodumare gave him the permission to come see him, to bring the Ebo, and to let him know what's going on Earth, report to him of what is going on. So Olodumare is the supreme god in Yoruba.
Okay. And Eshu would be the communication between humanity and the supreme.
Yes.
Is that the understanding?
Correct.
Okay. Okay. All right, because I've read something about it, and, you know, I understand it, but some people might not quite understand. Let me ask you, let's see, I've not seen any calls have come in for reading, so we might not get any on this show. So I know you do your show, but I'd love to have you back for more discussion, and hopefully we get opportunity to do some readings. Let me ask you, what tarot decks do you commonly use for readings? Since do you use those that are related to the traditions, or do you use decks that are more of your common decks that you might see?
Well, to be honest with you, unfortunately, I only use a right away deck, because when I learned how to use the tarot cards and whatnot, the only cards at that time was available to me was the right away.
Okay.
Now, for me to cross over to the traditional ones, I can do that, but the meanings are different, which means I have to study that process all over again, pretty much so. You know what I'm saying? So I never really actually did that, took the time to do that. Because what happens is, soon I'll be, you know, initiated properly, and I'll be, you know, working with Opele, you know, and, you know, 16 carry shells. You have to learn at least the 16 Odus. You have to have the 16 Odus on membrane. So to learn about more tarot cards and then try to learn Odus, I'm going to go with the Odus, the 16 Odus, and et cetera.
I understand. You only got so much time and so much energy. Let me ask you specifically, we didn't get a chance to talk specifically about the Yoruba Society itself. Explain to me the Yoruba Society, and I believe you have a website and storefront set up. Explain what services and goods you provide there.
Well, the Yoruba Society I put together some time ago is a society, it's an underground event, you know. And the whole purpose of the Yoruba Society that I put together is to protect and preserve the tradition. You know what I'm saying? Which means that we practice from a traditional perspective, and we keep things in a traditional perspective. You know, and we pretty much embrace how can I say it? Indigenous people only. In the Yoruba Society. So if you much not, one of us, you know, we kind of like, you know, we just want to, you know, pretty much preserve the tradition instead of, you know, just allowing any and everyone up in the tradition, because what happens is people begin to tamper with the tradition. And, you know, they try to whitewash their Orishas and, you know what I'm saying, give white images of Orishas. And, you know, some people want to claim their Orishas as being European and whatnot.
Okay.
And, you know, that's not traditional. All their Orishas is 401 of them. And they're all African, dark skin, complexion, all of them. including Obatala. So, you know, when you have, you know, people with melanin knowing and practicing your tradition and keeping it the way it's supposed to be kept, then, you know, that's preserving the tradition. Anything outside of that is not really preserving tradition, because you're mixing, you're allowing non-traditional people in, and, you know, then they just, you know, they just paint the images, Yamayas being white, and, you know, it's just not correct information. You know, all their reaches are African, dark Africans. So that is the whole purpose of the Yoruba tradition, to preserve and protect the tradition of non-indigenous people.
Okay. And tell them about the website and the storefront. What services do you provide there?
On the website, it's selling like a lot of spiritual supplies and things you might need. Unfortunately, right now, I don't have any traditional items on the Yoruba website selling them. So when person go there, it's a lot of candles, a lot of stuff. It looked like a Wiccan site or maybe a voodoo site, or the case may be. And I'm still in the process of getting traditional things from Nigeria so I can sell. And I have to know what's going to sell, because I don't want to, like, purchase and have all those things and trying to sell, and it's kind of difficult of selling and whatnot, you know. But the things that on the site is what's selling right now, to raise the money, hold the money, and to buy the traditional things, so therefore I can have traditional things from Nigeria on the Yoruba Society.com website. So, you know, you have critics who go on there and says, oh, it says the Yoruba Society, but there's nothing from the traditional from the motherland on there. You know, you're going to have your critics who just want to look for fault and just want to have something to say. So I don't spoke on it for them and gave them an explanation of why already. But soon, you know, I will have traditional things on there, and it will be a lot of traditional things on there. And me personally, I like magic from all parts. You know what I'm saying? Because, you know, magic, you know, derived from the motherland, period. And then, you know, it derives in different places, and it, you know, it became something totally different, or what the case may be, and practice different, and look different. But it's still magic, and it falls under, you know, the umbrella of magic. So, therefore, I'm still interact with it, and I sell the things that people may need. And, you know, you have people in red towns that they don't have the spiritual shops there to get the things that they need for their practice, so I pretty much try to provide that service for them, so therefore they can go online to purchase and still be able to obtain it with no problem.
Okay. What kind of things traditionally do you think you're going to offer soon? What traditional items do you see coming in the future that you're going to get from directly from the tradition in Africa?
I can't pronounce the proper name for it correctly, but it's like a base that you will keep your, that e kings in. And kings is Ifa. You keep Ifa in. The Opeles, that's what Babalawo, only a Babalawo used to divine with. A lot of things dealing with what the Babalawos use, mainly. You know what I'm saying? You have calabashes over there who have been painted, you know what I'm saying, very well. Like Chango is red and white. The calabash is painted very nice, hooked up red and white. Like over here in the Americas, you have these bases that people keep their orishas in, and they look like little antique stuff like that, because that's leukemia. But if you don't want to keep it in those bases, you can order the calabash has been painted and designed and hooked up just for that orisha. I'll be selling those. The leki that they have in Nigeria is totally different from what they have over here. And I'll be selling those, you know, concentrated, and some concentrated, some unconcentrated, however you like it. Let me see. There's a lot of things in Nigeria that I it's like I know it when I see them, but I can't pronounce the proper names for them. So for me trying to pronounce it and not pronounce it correctly, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to make a fool of myself. But I know exactly what to get and how it's used, and mainly the Babalawos use it. I know exactly, you know, how that goes.
Right. And when do you think you're going to be at that stage? Is it coming sometime this year, in the next couple months? What do you
I would say sometime this year. This year just started, and it's starting off on a good foot. So I would definitely say sometime this year. I can't put a time and a date on it, you know what I'm saying, because I don't like to make myself look like a liar. But I'm making a serious effort to get over there and do my ceremonies and, you know, start importing, exporting traditional items.
All right, bro, we're getting ready to wrap up. It's almost, the hour's almost gone by. It went by pretty quick. Is there anything else you want to say, anything you want to promote, website you want to give the address out for, phone number? Do you want to go ahead and plug your show one more time?
Well, maybe on the next show we'll get into a little bit more about Nkisi. And that's what I'm also initiated to, Nkisi. Now, my title in Nkisi is I'm a Tata and Palo Miyombe. And I pretty much work with my Nganga for clients and things like that. So I'm a priest on one end and a practitioner on the other end. And, you know, I'll go into that in further more detail. My show is come on every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time all the way to about 12 a.m. My cell phone number, the area code is 203-252-4659. You can call me more regards for my show to come on Mondays. And, you know, for readings or whatever problem that you may have, if I can assist you, I can assist you. If I can't, I'll point you to the Babalawo that I work with, and he would be better more to assist you, the individual, I should say.
All right, all right. Brother, thank you again for being a guest on the show. I think I've learned a lot of things. Once again, everybody, this is Brother S.U. Shango with the Yoruba Society. He has his own show on Blog Talk Radio on Monday nights. So look him up, search on Blog Talk, and I'm sure you can tune in and check his show out. I want to thank anybody who tuned in and anybody that's going to listen in the archives. Once again, this is iMagine Nation Radio, from Black Time to Live. Thank you for joining us.